The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, back from China after a week spent watching big men shifting lorries, and that was just a local ice cream salesman, to find what? Arsenal not in crisis, as Gunners win Champions League preliminary, but what will happen when their injury-ravaged squad faces the team that bought the players they shoulda, aka Spurs? In other midweek news, Celtic bounce back with the big defeat of Crazy Kazakhs in House of Commons. Well done to Neil Lennon's men. We get the latest on the state of play in Germany, France, Italy and Spain. And we look forward to that exciting clash Sunday at Anfield, Liverpool-Manchester United. All of that coming up in today's World Broadcast for Cash, clearinghouse for media pros, formerly Football Weekly. Right, off we go then. Good to be back. Many thanks to Max Rushton for standing in my absence. And delighted that you could find time to be with us, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. How's it going?
Very well, thanks.
Good. Philippe Reclay is here as well.
Hello.
As is Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Hi. And Barry, first of all, the really exciting news that I missed out on was your radio show.
Yeah, me and Maxie.
How's it going?
Not bad, actually. It's good fun. Talk right. Sports. On Sunday mornings, 11 to 1. Don't touch that dial.
Jonathan Wilson's now on telly, have you seen?
Yes, he was on Sky Sports News today, moving circles around a rectangle.
Yeah.
I think he'd purloined.
It's every bit as good telly as it sounds, can I tell you? Raphael Honigstein, you're all over the place.
Children's programme or something like that.
No, that's an interesting shout, though, isn't it?
Mm.
Inverting the pyramid.
But he was doing it last week as well, so it must be a regular gig. And yeah. People were asking him on Twitter, you know, is that, have they let you play with Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher's toy? But apparently it isn't their toy. It's
their toy.
The Formula One toy that's been specially adapted for Jonathan Wilson's specific football needs.
Right, well, it's on YouTube anyway if you want. Soon, you'll all be famous enough for Max Rushton to drop little anecdotes about knowing you on other broadcasting entities, which is quite
Or famous enough to give him a spare microwave oven.
Great, because we haven't had a mention of that yet so far in this episode. Super. Nice to be back anyway. I tell you what, there's been football. Football. Champions League preliminaries.
We have to ask, how was China?
How was China?
Yeah, where you were surrounded by big burly men.
Yes.
Did defending champion Zidorinus Savickas?
That's really poor work. I thought you were a fan of strongman in general, and in particular Big Z's work.
Zidorinus Savickas.
Zidorinus Savickas, Z.
Did he retain his title?
I can't possibly comment on that. I can tell you that China was, in a word, sweaty. And the twin obstacles of extreme humidity and really bad hotel food left one or two of the athletes, or in fact six or seven of the athletes, with major, major gastric problems.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, which ahead of squat lifts...
Oh, no!
...proved catastrophic in more than one case.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
dear. And we were running a 400 frames a second slow-mo camera on that. Channel 5
really,
at Christmas.
You're really selling it well.
I tell you what, that's the kind of thing I would tune in for.
They won't have that on TV, will they?
I'm not sure. Anyway.
After the watershed, so to speak.
So to speak, Philippe. Anyway, no, but it was really interesting and a great competition and very exotic locale and all that.
Good.
But Champions League preliminaries, how exciting were they?
I watched Celtic, like I think most people did.
Okay, well, let's talk about Celtic.
Mm-hmm.
Crikey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The word I would have used, crikey.
Right. And Neil Lennon calls it the greatest thing he's ever done in football.
Well, that might be a slight exaggeration.
Well, it is. He's saying it.
He said it, but yeah. I mean, you might have thought that beating Barcelona was perhaps just a little bit notch above, perhaps beating...
At that
I'm
time
just saying it. If he feels that was his greatest...
That
I'm
time
go
he headbutted Alan Shearer's foot.
Yep, there's another
impressive.
One. All right, and Chris Commons agree. What a furious shot he unleashed there. Best night of my football career, says Chris Commons. Tops Moscow and Barca, and we couldn't have done it without our faithful. Hashtag best fans in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think he means us, actually. I'm not entirely sure. We've always been right behind them here on Football Weekly. What did you think, Rafa?
I thought it was one of those really old school European ties where you lose a first leg in a really exotic locale and then come back and do these foreigners. On your own shore, throwing everything at them, and they're not quite sure what this is. You know, this is not football. how they used to. And it was great. It was wonderful. And I think Celtic, with the greatest respect to Shakhtar, Kara, whatever.
Gandhi. Like the Mahatma. Think of Mahatma.
It's nice to see Celtic in the Champions League. I think they're a great name and a great stadium and should be there.
I mean, it's a strange build-up to the game because we had all the palaver over the sheep sacrifice and UEFA actually coming out and telling a football team that animal slaughter at football grounds won't be tolerated. And then Neil Lennon was a bit chippy over comments the Shakhtar Karaganda manager had apparently made, in which he'd said, we will score two goals at Celtic Park. But the only comments I read that he'd made were him basically hoisting the white flag and saying, most of our fans don't think we'll win. It doesn't really matter if we don't win because we're happy enough to be in the Europa League.
Oh, bless.
So everyone was a winner at Celtic Park last night.
Excellent.
But one thing, though,
about
the football, I think, you know, people who have this idea of kind of smash-bang-wallop image of Scottish football would have perhaps have been surprised by the way Celtic played. And, I mean, Charlie Mulgrew, for example, I think far better player than people give him credit or don't give him credit for.
Anthony
Stokes, yes. Yeah, certainly that little shimmy in the box for Forest's goal. And in general, the way they build the play was very good indeed. The ball retention was excellent. Actually, you could say the ball retention, of course, it was Shakhtar Karagandy in front of them, but was better than what we saw at Old Trafford on Monday night in some cases. No, I thought they were very impressive.
Good. Yeah. All right. And Arsenal against Fenerbahce, the game they didn't need to play?
Yeah, they need to play it. I mean, have a look, you know, the Emirates. I know there's always the discrepancy between tickets sold and bums on seats, but the discrepancy was extraordinary. I think they said they sold something like 59,000 tickets. And I think probably there were, 35,000 in the ground, something like that? Perhaps.
To see a second straight triumph for Arsene Wenger's men, though.
Yeah, and 12 wins out of 12 games in Champions League playoffs.
Really?
Yeah, it's quite a record. And Aaron Ramsey confirming that he's back, really.
Yeah, everyone's now raving about Aaron Ramsey. Of
before he was short-crossed.
Okay. Mm. Well, that's interesting because coming up, of course, for Arsenal is an extremely big fixture this very weekend. They're at home to Spurs on Sunday. Are you going along to that?
Oh, you bet. Yes, absolutely. I think they're playing Spurs at the right time because I think playing Spurs in about 5 or 6 months' time is going to be some proposition for any club in this country.
You don't think that that as yet AVB will have mixed his ingredients and taken the cake out of the
oven? I don't know. I mean, what I've seen so far, the game at Crystal Palace, the victory against Swansea, it's still very much a work in progress. They look solid. They haven't, you know, conceded many chances. The two goals they have scored, I'm not talking about Dinamo Tbilisi, but the two goals they have scored in the Premier League have been on penalties. It's not quite fluent, but no doubt it will be. I mean, when you see the recruitment has been magnificent, really. Mm. You know, Franco Baldini has done an absolutely extraordinary job. I think if people think they question the wisdom of having a kind of continental sports director, I think Spurs give a perfect example of why you need him.
All right. The other good thing about not playing Spurs in 5 or 6 times is that there's a chance that Arsenal can still get 11 players together, because if they don't sign other people, the way their injuries are going, they probably will, come spring, have a real problem. What do you think about this game, Rafa?
It's a tough one to call because Arsenal, the Villa game aside, have looked fairly good and still have a lot of quality in the squad. And I can almost understand Wenger when he says, you know, I believe in these players and they are actually quite good and maybe we need something special to add. And I still think that for all their drawbacks, they still work better as a team right now than Spurs do. So I'd make them favourites to win this game, still.
Am I hearing this right, Barry? Are Arsenal favourites to beat Spurs this weekend?
I don't know if they are or not. I can't call it.
I mean, so far they've beaten a Fenerbahce team who have one or two issues, and Fulham, who I'm reliably informed are now the laziest team in football, with Bent and Berbatov and the great Adel Taarabt. Hardly a big, imposing, physical, in-your-face kind of threat. Spurs surely are a different category of opponent.
They are, yeah, but Arsenal are better gelled as a team. But
especially now, Spurs don't have Gareth Bale because he's about the best gelled player out there in the Premier League.
Yeah, actually, on the subject of Bale, I keep reading these articles about what a level-headed young man he is, and then seeing photographs of him wearing a pink baseball hat backwards and
with
big aviator shades, and displaying a total lack of respect for his employers by not turning up for work just seems at odds with what's being written about him. I mean, he's always seemed a very nice man, but I'm slightly concerned he might be losing the run of himself.
Right.
Build up to this big move. But anyway, I digress. For me, that the game is just too hard to call. I expect goals, probably three or more, and if I was having a bet on it, that's where I'd put my money.
Right.
I think the Bale thing is interesting, though. I've got a feeling, of course, there's this kind of political motivation, you know, it's terrible, you have to let me go, I'm not going to show up. But I sense, this is just a suspicion of mine, that he's also really afraid to get injured, that he'd rather jog in the park for the last 2 weeks than have training with teammates who know he might be off. You know, he's not known as a hard man of the Premier League, and spoke to a former Spurs assistant who was very dismissive of him, who said, you know, he'll never be anything because he's so soft and, you know, never gets up and etc. So maybe he was just afraid that his dream move will fall through.
Afraid or furious? What was the word, Philippe? Furious and
frustrated.
Furious and frustrated.
Yeah, not angry and confused.
No, that was Wayne Rooney. Mm. And what were the other buzzwords of transfer parlance?
Derisory and disrespectful.
Right. Insulting.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gareth Bale, we'll talk about him with Sid Lowe very shortly. Yes, Sid making his return. Exciting news. Are Arsenal actually going to sign anyone then? Because they've got what until Monday?
Well, they have
Monday
signed
evening?
Somebody yesterday.
Flamini.
Mathieu is back.
Flamini?
Yes, on the free. Not a bad achievement, not a bad choice. I thought there's a squad player. Yeah, absolutely. Why not?
Seriously, Philippe?
Well, yeah, I don't see what's wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with
it. He was, you know, he's one of those players who whose level dropped a bit when he left the club. But he stayed at the club. He was very versatile. I remember that was him that would play that left back in that quite extraordinary Champions League campaign in 2005-06. And was the little corporal in that midfield of that team that completely walloped Milan at San Siro, as you will remember. So he, you know, decent player.
And yep. That was, what, 6 years ago? Five?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right.
It doesn't solve all the problems.
But all the
other
players...
It doesn't address the problems in other areas of the team, but...
Right. That's the kind of the issue that I'm raising. The players that they've been linked with, the Ozils and Cabayes and all the others...
Yeah, flabbergasting Cabayes, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't necessarily seem to be addressing the areas of weakness in the squad.
That's what most people would say, yes.
Right.
Perhaps you could see the sense to bring a so-called enforcer, even though, you know, when you look back and you're wondering, in which team did Arsene Wenger had a real enforcer? Patrick Vieira, was he a typical enforcer? I'm not too sure about that.
Gilberto,
the invisible wall. But he was more, Gilberto was about positioning. He's not the kind of hard tackler. He could tackle as well, but the positioning was magnificent.
But Flamini aside then, do you think someone is going to be on the way in this week?
I'm convinced, yes, that there will be
and
some.
Who's there going to be?
I have absolutely no idea.
Ah.
I'd say they'll get Cabaye. And if I was Wenger, I'd break the bank to get Ozil in.
Right. If you were Wenger, what a different world we'd be living in. In Barry Knows would be the banners.
No, it wouldn't be.
But the problem is it, I mean, the striker is a big problem. You know, you can't rely on Giroud to play something like 55 games a season. That's
right.
Ridiculous.
But they'll buy and someone, will they, Philippe?
Bentner's still there.
Bentner's still there, that's very true.
I saw yesterday, actually.
Did you see Carlos Vela yesterday, by the way? Another double for Carlos Vela, for Real Sociedad.
There you go.
Completely walloped Lyon.
Mm.
Yeah, another great night for French football in Europe.
Well, indeed. We'll talk more about French football a little bit later on, but very disappointing.
Very disappointing indeed.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about French football in a second. Chelsea, though, on a kind of transfer note, Eto, is that now a done deal, Raphael?
It's not a done deal, but it looks like it will happen.
At the time of recording, he is in London to sign on the dotted line and presumably due medically arrived at St Pancras last night.
How funny would it be if Spurs came in? For him.
That funny.
Yeah. Actually, Arsenal could come in because Wenger has always had a healthy regard for Samuel Eto'o, to say the least.
Okay.
Absolutely. Doesn't cost much money. Big wages, but hardly any transfer fee.
What about one matter in the days that remain of this transfer?
That is crazy.
It's a bit strange what's going on there. I mean, Mourinho said he's not for sale. He's not going anywhere. Chelsea have kind of sent word that he's not for sale. At the same time, he seemed to be worried enough to give an interview or brief our friend Rory Smith at the Times to say that he's not going anywhere, which almost sounds like, you know, I've got a feeling you might try to move me on here, but I want to stay. And it's hard to understand why Oscar seems to be the number 10 who's played in all games so far, and Mata's been very peripheral.
Michael Cox actually has a theory, which may or may not have a grain of truth to it, that the reason Mata's a peripheral figure at Chelsea is because Mourinho isn't a fan because Mata is friends with several of the players Mourinho fell out with at Real Madrid. So it might be cobblers, it might be true, it's interesting.
There are also people who are saying that there is within Mourinho, I mean, Portuguese, a kind of anti-Spanish bias, because he's not the only one who's been left by the wayside. Says Azpilicueta, who had a terrific end to the season. And you would have thought...
It's a kind of Lusitanian rivalry thing going on, you think?
Well, you know, some Spanish friends have told me that, but, you know, they're Spaniards and they don't have...
They hate Portuguese, don't they?
Well, they look at them from, you know, they look down.
Do they?
On the nose, yes, and the Portuguese. But it's very odd because...
And the French he was looked down on both.
He was unquestionably... He was my vote for Footballer of the Year last season. And he was Footballer of the Season as well for Chelsea fans the season before that.
Yeah.
And you can, you know... It's true that, okay, there was the Confederations Cup, he had a long holiday, he had a hamstring injury in the pre-season, so you might think he's not fully fit, but he's been on the bench. So if he's on the bench, surely he can have at least a bit part role to play.
You would hate to see a season in which he didn't feature regularly for Chelsea.
That would be, I don't think, maybe the Chelsea fans would ask themselves quite a lot of questions if that were the case.
Well, he did start against Villa, so, you know, it's one out of three he did start, and so let's not... jump to conclusions, but I think there is a slight unease about his position in the squad.
Wow. Chelsea, of course, have a very big game coming up this Friday evening. Raphael, stop me if I'm wrong, in Prague in the European Super Cup against Bayern Munich?
Yes, they do. And it's the first Super Cup that I can remember that
Prague.
Seems to be very, very meaningful for everybody concerned, certainly for Bayern. It's Pep's first chance to really prove himself after indifferent start, shall we say. It's the first chance to win a trophy that Jupp Heynckes hasn't won yet. In fact, Bayern have never won the trophy. And for Mourinho, with the whole Pep thing and Chelsea courting Guardiola quite openly, it's also a big game. And let's not forget, the demise of Roberto Di Matteo started when they were demolished by Atletico Madrid in front of Abramovich and all his friends and family, who probably felt a little bit embarrassed. So it's a big game, and it's amazing, because I think what's happening is, in a wider context, is because football is becoming more international and we're all aware of the big teams, and because some of these teams are very dominant, like Bayern, it's almost as if you'd like more of these fixtures to happen. And the way the Champions League is set up is brilliant, but, you know, Bayern and Chelsea can meet at the earliest in February. They might not even meet at all for the next 5-6 years. So to see them play against each other with Pep and Mourinho at opposite ends is really exciting.
Mm. Unlike Chelsea's performance on Monday, of course, do you think they're going to throw a little bit more at this game?
The problem was that if you set up the way that Mourinho was set up and then your tactics going forward don't come off, it looks very dull and terrible, because you give the ball away constantly. They're looking for the ball over the top, it doesn't come off, so, you know, they lose the ball instantly, and then it comes back because United also struggled and it looked horrible. It all only takes one or two of these passes to be played a little bit better, and then you say, wow, you know, look at this tremendously efficient, brutalist Mourinho masterclass. So I wouldn't say they were boring in the sense of, you know, they were just terrible. It's just that it didn't quite come off as well as he wanted to going forward. Defensively, they were very, very strong, and they were almost back to the old Chelsea best, with everyone working really, really hard, almost like, you know, like a soldier team. And it's amazing, because I look back at the last few games, and they started the same seven players at the back every single game. So they already have kind of a strong core of players there, and it's just the front three or four that are still struggling to find their rhythm.
How far are Pep's Bayern away from being Pep's Bayern?
They are Pep's Bayern, but perhaps not in the way that everybody wants them to be. They're Pep's Bayern in the sense they're very attacking, but almost a little bit too open for their own good.
Ooh.
He's got this idea that Bastian Schweinsteiger is the sole guy in midfield, holding everything together, and in front of him he's got five players, essentially. So when they do lose the ball, the idea, like Barcelona, is to win it back very quickly with all these players who are up there anyway. But against the better sides, that's not always going to be possible. And then at times, you know, Bayern looked very, very open against fairly mediocre opposition in the Bundesliga. So that's why this is such a big game as well, because it'll show just how far he can push this kind of tactic onto this Bayern team. There's also the problem that Schweinsteiger is not fully fit. He will probably play, but he picked up a knock on his ankle on Tuesday night. Javi Martinez, who is the perfect guy as far as holding the midfield together, is still having a problem with his groin and won't play. And Thiago is injured. So all of a sudden, a team that looked as if they had too many midfielders look a little bit short as far as a real orthodox central midfielder is concerned. So I think Bayern will have problems in that spot, especially if Oscar and Mata will have a good game and, you know, get into these holes, into these positions in front of the back four. So I think Chelsea have a good chance here.
All right. You've seen both teams in operation recently. Which one do you think is going to have this?
There's very little between those two sides. It'll come down to taking their chances, because Bayern will probably create more, but Chelsea, with a bit more efficiency in terms of playing that killer ball over the top, could have a very, very good chance of winning this as well.
All right. More to come from Rafa, Philippe and Barry after this. Rafa, Gundogan,
mm-hmm.
Is he going to leave Borussia Dortmund?
Not this summer, no.
Okay, because he's been linked to Arsenal as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Okay, and Lewandowski signed a new deal.
And Manchester United.
And Manchester United too. And Kagawa, is he going back to the Bundesliga?
Well, it's very funny because, there's a free Shinji campaign that's been started by Borussia fans.
How many packages?
Which has started trending in Japan, at least on Japanese Twitter.
Yep.
But it's not going to happen. I think they kind of floated the idea of maybe taking him back on loan, but he seems to be convinced that he'll have a good chance of playing. And there's a question, would he even start at Dortmund right now this year? Maybe not.
Interesting. Let's dial up Sid Lowe, a controversial absentee from Tuesday's post-Monday night podcast, but standing by with all sorts of exciting stuff to tell us after Spain's big Super Cup fixture at the Bernabeu. Stone the Crows.
Hello, Jimbo. How are you?
Sid Lowe's Spanish Report. Sid, how are you?
Thanks. How are you doing?
I'm very well. What are you wearing today, Sid? Because last time it was flip-flop shorts and a T-shirt. Is the weather still clement?
Well, funny enough, it is flip-flop shorts and a T-shirt today as well.
Super duper. You probably had a late night last night, much like the players in the Spanish Super Cup.
Yeah, I probably had more or less the same late night that they had, although I imagine because they've got today off and I haven't, they probably went out and celebrated afterwards.
Right. Well, some of them did, but not the Atletico players.
No, although it's a weird one because they came out of it, I think, feeling kind of reinforced by it. They probably just about could claim to have been a better side over the two legs. They lost overall on away goals because, of course, 1-1 draw at the Calderon, 0-0 last night. But they also felt slightly robbed by the referee. But then PK made a good point afterwards, probably not the way that he should have made it. I think it came across as a little bit of a whinge, but it was a good point. He said, when both teams come out of a game moaning about the referee, you get the feeling the referee's done something wrong.
Hmm.
And he was awful, I thought. But there you go. But I don't particularly like it. I'm like a football manager, Jimbo. I don't like talking about referees.
Right, okay. So anyway, Tata wins his first trophy at Barca. Tick.
Although Tata says it's not his first trophy.
Ah.
Because he said this is the Supercoppa, which, for those who don't know, is the equivalent of the Charity Shield, or whatever Charity Shield's called these days. And he said, so this really is a success of the players and the coach from last year.
Ah, well, that's nice of him. Good. Gareth Bale, etc. You wrote a long piece in The Guardian today, which didn't seem long reading, I have to say, but in Colm Inch's terms, as a measure of your stature within the sporting desk, certainly was of a more than adequate size. Anyway, having successfully dug myself out of that one, you talked about the fact that Bale would have to respect internal dressing room politics at the Bernabeu. I have two questions about that. What kind of thing is it? I mean, are there boring details about where you can sit and, you know, who gets first dibs on the hairdryer, that kind of thing? And the second thing is, to what extent could these political problems be alleviated by the departure of Ronaldo? Is there any chance of that happening?
He won't go, I mean, unless something absolutely amazing that we're, you know, there's something amazing that we're not aware of, which I'm pretty convinced there isn't. Ronaldo will not be going this summer. Ronaldo's still in contract negotiations with Real Madrid, he's in contract negotiations. He's not really negotiating with them. And his contract is going into its final 2 years. So his hand is being strengthened. So if and when he does re-sign with Real Madrid, he will get massive, massive money. And if he decides not to, of course, then he'll be in a very, very strong position to move on elsewhere. But it's not going to happen this summer.
Okay, cool. And how much of a minefield, personality-wise, is that dressing room?
Well, I mean, it's a weird one because it's difficult for players in terms of feeling accepted, feeling like they're part of it. But there's a kind of, at times, a temptation to look at it too much as something where it's, you know, where it's kind of genuinely someone trying to do over someone else. That doesn't happen often, although it did happen to Michael Owen. It's more that players
who tried to do over Michael Owen?
Well, Michael Owen turned up, and essentially there were three forwards for the two striking positions with Raúl, Morientes and Owen. And there was a certain degree of agitation towards the manager to ensure that the man who played was Morientes, not Owen.
Well, luckily, Gareth Bale's not going to be competing for a place against someone really high profile within the Real organisation. Oh, hang on.
Well, this is a question mark. The two things, which is how do you put him in the team and how do you settle him into the team in terms of which position? And Madrid have already gone for a style that I personally think that the early signs are this is a style that doesn't suit Ronaldo. But I think once Ronaldo and Bale get there, they might actually shift to something different again. And then the other question is how he settles in terms of is he going to be happy? Are people going to take to him? What is his relationship going to be like with people in the dressing room? Which, of course, you can live without that in the sense that you're paid a lot of money, you've got lots of people looking after you. But if you're really going to enjoy the time in Spain and be a better player, then you need to embrace that. And I think it's one of the reasons why, if you ask the people who've been at Real Madrid, if you ask them whether they felt it had been a worthwhile trip and whether it had been successful, their responses wouldn't necessarily be just about what they did on the pitch. And Michael Owen wrote that piece in The Telegraph, which... he was saying that he never settled, he wasn't happy, he was in a hotel and all that sort of stuff. And apart from the fact that you read that and you think, well, you probably should have done more about it yourself, he's got a point. And that's one of the reasons why he was so keen to go. It wasn't really about what he did on the pitch, it was about how he felt off it.
Right. If only he'd had a better translator. I think that was very much the
feeling.
That
was very much his problem, yeah. I mean, he had this terrible problem that he went into a dressing room in which all his teammates had realised he was gay.
Do explain, Sid.
Sorry, yeah, otherwise that's a very strange thing to say, isn't it? Well, it was your fault. You raised the translator issue, yes. Yeah.
Sid, you were his translator.
In press conferences, yes. And in a press conference, there was a very small grammatical shift between two versions of the verb to be, which basically meant I had Michael Owen saying that Frank Lampard was really fit, but not really fit in the run around for 90 minutes sense of the word.
Oh, I see. Right.
Couldn't you have taken Michael Owen into your home, Sid, when he was moaning about living in a hotel?
Well, I wouldn't go quite so far as that, but genuinely, when I read that piece this time round, there was a little bit of me that thought, "Now, it's kind of sad. You think, what a waste." And you sort of look back and you think, "Look, of course, a footballer doesn't want to be great mates with a journalist." But you do look back at it and you think, "Christ, Michael, if you'd told us, then maybe some people could have done a bit more to help you settle in."
Not waving, but drowning. Are you going to be doing Gareth Bale's translation, Sid?
I don't think so. No.
All right.
In fact, I can pretty well guarantee that I won't be.
All right, Sid. Let me finish off then, unless anyone else has got any other questions, by just saying to you, Arsenal need to buy some players. Are they going to get any from Spain in the next 3-4 days?
I doubt it.
Okay. Which countries does that leave? France. Thanks ever so much, Sid. Cheerio.
Cheerio.
That leaves France, Philippe.
As a country to buy people, to buy players in.
Yeah.
Which ones?
Well, I was going to ask you that very question.
Just trying to...
You've got to buy someone. Time's ticking, Philippe.
Yeah, I know, but, well, he's got, already yes.
He's
got...
Yeah, exactly.
He's got yeah, yes or no go already.
He's got Sonogo and Flamini.
Yeah, yeah, doesn't come from a French club, but that doesn't matter.
No?
Well, I think the cupboard is a bit bare
oui.
At the moment, especially since you've got PSG and Monaco on, you know, trying to carry on signing players. Mm. And Monaco is carrying on signing players. PSG are apparently on Caballé as well. And you look around and you're thinking in the other clubs, I mean, of course, you could look at Lyon perhaps and think Johan Gourcuff, you know, has had a tremendous start to the season.
And that's
a bit
exactly the kind of player that Arsenal are looking for as well. They're so short-staffed on attacking midfielders.
Yeah, that's true. And if you look at strikers, well, apart from the guys who are at PSG and Monaco, if you look at defenders, yes, there's Mamadou Sakho at PSG, who is in a very delicate situation.
All right. No,
because
then.
Now you've
basically,
got Thiago,
no. They're not gonna get
Thiago Silva and Marquinhos now. So right. And even Alex got a game. So... I can't see, no. I mean, France is not what it used to be.
All right.
In terms of...
Is there someone in France who understands what Wenger's doing in this transfer market?
Not really, no. Not really. No. I think I've answered, not really. Hmm. And amongst the young hopefuls, you know, you've got Grenier at Lyon, but he will stay at Lyon. The team is going to be built around him. You've got this incredible situation with Thauvin in Lille, who is now on strike. You know, trying to engineer the under-20 world champion, who is trying to engineer a move to Marseille. Quite a story because he's advised by a guy who is nicknamed Uncle Adil.
Nice.
And he's a butcher in the 18th arrondissement of Paris. He has no license whatsoever. Right. And he's the guy through whom all the clubs have got to go through if they want to have a word with Thauvin, the great
hope. What kind of arrondissement is the 18th?
It's colourful.
Right.
Well, it's Sacré-Cœur, Montmartre, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he's a butcher there.
He's a butcher there. Yeah. Cool.
Have you heard anything,
the butcher of Montmartre?
Yes.
Right.
Le boucher de Montmartre.
Cool. Very.
It's my ambition to get through this podcast, finishing a sentence that isn't interrupted by somebody.
Like you do on TalkSport, eh? Mm.
Like you just did.
Yeah, I just did that. Mm-hmm. We were talking about music on Tuesday's pod, and I mentioned Mogwai.
Oh, yeah.
And their guitarist, Stuart Braithwaite, was so chuffed at us giving his, you know, struggling band a leg up.
He sent you a Jaffa cake?
No, but he's promised to have a rummage around in their old offcuts and get us some new theme music.
Bless!
Yeah. So I told him, he probably doesn't need me to tell him what kind of mood music we need, but something between, say, Zidane and
that wasn't deemed
that
good
zombie
enough,
French thing
right.
would do suit our audience.
I can't
to
tell
a
you how made up I am to know that Mogwai are considering giving us something they would otherwise throw away. Yeah. Thanks, Mogwai. A bundle. I thought that maybe they might compose something special, you know, given that...
Well,
I
thought
it would
be a bit impertinent to ask him to compose something special, but if he wants to.
But that's what he does, no? That's his business. Yeah. I have to think, no. That's a little bit like if someone were to say to me, Jimbo, I'm writing a book, can I have a few comments for the back cover? And I basically sent them some off-cuts from my intro to Football Weekly. It's more or less the same thing. You'd expect me to write, well, actually, this book was kind of et cetera.
So basically what we're saying is, shove your offcuts, Stuart Braithwaite. We want an original composition.
It might be really, really good, in which case, you know, I don't want to... Thanks for the thought, anyway. we haven't talked about the big game, but what?
You're an ingrate.
Yeah. Marseille with a huge game this weekend. It's, what do they call this, the Derby of the Riviera or something like
no,
that?
No, the Derby of the Riviera is the one against between Nice and Monaco.
Okay, so when it's against Monaco, which it is this weekend...
We can call it the Derby de la Côte d'Azur. Come on, we can, yeah.
The Derby of the Côte d'Azur?
Well, maybe we can try.
Okay, yeah. Which has got extra spice this time around because of all the players that Monaco brought into the mix.
Yes.
Do they go into this as favourites against the league-leading L'OM?
I don't think so, actually. For two reasons. One of them is you've got a Marseille team that started the season very much as they have done of late, which is with very, 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 very fine results. I mean, grinding out results really more than anything else. But still very, very solid defensively. given a few, I mean, the one thing in which perhaps they're a little bit fragile is dead ball situation, set pieces, which is perhaps not one of the great strengths of Monaco.
Mm.
So you would imagine that they should be doing all right defensively.
Monaco's strengths, apart from having loads of money?
Well, when they go forward, they do look impressive. I think they've got weaknesses, particularly on both flanks.
Right.
And Basque on the left flank.
But they got Falcao, haven't they?
Not just Falcao.
Muchinho.
Muchinho.
And
James Rodriguez.
The old Porto trio.
Yeah, Ocampo as well. You know, there's a... the George Mendes connection.
Mm.
And they've looked quite impressive at times going forward. I consider that it looked particularly convincing in last time round, but it's true it was very, very strange, this game, this draw they played in an empty Louis II.
Against Toulouse?
Yeah.
Why was it empty?
It was empty because they were punished by the league, yeah, because of people letting off, smoke bombs and invading the pitch last season. And they were lucky in a way because they were supposed to be deducted 2 points, and the league finally decided that wouldn't be the case. But they still had to play this game behind closed doors, and it was really odd, especially as the
game
was
televised. Does it make that much difference given their normal home crowd?
Well, this season, believe it or not, it would make a difference. The home game for their first game at Louis II was over 14,000, which is, 4,000 short of capacity. Very impressive indeed, because, I mean, it's obvious that there is a kind of Falcao effect. When they played at Bordeaux, for example, I think there were 34,000 people at Chamon Delmas as opposed to 19,000 average last season. So they really are dragging people in the stadiums.
They are box office. And Velodrome, you're expecting that to be packed out?
No, I don't expect it to be absolutely sold out. I mean, the Velodrome anyway, at the moment the stadium is being redone. It's a bit of a, I think the atmosphere is going to play its role. And as well, as the Marseillais public is fantastic. And I think it comes a little bit, it's going to be very interesting because you have on one side one team which is very, very well organized, which is Marseille, obviously. On the other, a team where Ranieri is trying to promote a kind of quite seductive, I have to say, forward play, attacking play or offensive play, as Wenger would say. So I think the ingredients are there for a terrific game. But I would put Marseille as my slight favorite for this one.
Yeah. Interesting. If only there was a way that we could watch that on English TV. Say, perhaps prefaced by all the best action from the Bundesliga league.
Is that possible?
It is possible, actually. Wow. Now that I come to think of it, it is possible this Sunday evening, round about 6:30. Super duper.
And Monsieur Joey will be in with you.
Oh, yeah. André-Pierre Gignac's friend in football.
Yeah.
Joey Barton will be...
Nothing but friends in Marseille.
Yep. He'll be watching that alongside myself, actually, on that.
Yeah.
Self-same broadcast. Barry, you'll be doing... What will you be doing on Sunday morning?
I will be probably still listening to the post-match press conferences of Paolo Di Canio and Ian Holloway, whose teams play at Selhurst Park on Saturday evening.
Yeah.
And I'm going to that.
Are you?
Yes. All so right. Hopefully, yeah.
Are you bothering to watch the game first or just going to the press conferences?
I'll probably try and get there in time for the game, but yeah, I'd say the press conference will be more entertaining.
Wow. That's quite a lineup, isn't it? And the Palace, with a little bit of catching up to do, they got knocked out of the cup, the Capital One Cup, by Bristol City. And they've lost both games in the league so far?
Yeah, I think they're going to struggle badly this season.
Mm.
And I'd say Ian Holloway could be the first manager to lose his job in the Premier League. He's... doesn't seem to be coping very well there at the moment.
You say that, but aren't they one of those clubs that has decided, well, basically, we know we're going down, we're not putting an awful lot of money in the club, we're going to get the TV money, we'll go back down the Championship, we'll be stronger and we'll come back again.
The Reading Protocol.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean...
What's wrong with that?
They have tried to sign a lot of players, but can't. Yesterday, actually, Nicholas Bentner and Joey Barton were being linked with the move to Palace.
They got Shamak.
That would be... Quite an interesting proposition.
It's interesting. That's one of the big games coming up this weekend. Big games. We haven't really talked about Italy, and I just want to say well done to Max Allegri, who was in a bit of a bad mood after his side storming win in the Champions League preliminaries. I think maybe one or two doubters out there were doing that doubting stuff after that 1-1 draw they had away at PSV. And it is fair to say that all the problems at the back looked evident once again as Christian Abbiati kept Milan in the game. But a storming 4-1 win, Balotelli looked brilliant, El Shaarawy looked great, Kevin Prince-Boateng looked fantastic. Mm. Oh, they did look very dangerous going forward and pretty dangerous at the other end as well. But super stuff. But one or two rumblings of discontent. The fans hanging out this big banner saying, don't buy Matri, go and buy a defender. And Galliani saying, we respect the fans, but we're going to totally disregard what they're saying. And Allegri saying, I might resign tonight. And all that kind of thing. Because, of course, they lost their opening game at the weekend. And yeah. Anyway, so that's good for Milan that they're in the Champions League, and good for Serie A as well. And I think that brings us to the end of part two. After this, the rest of the weekend, including an absolutely huge match at Anfield. Part three, Barry.
Yes.
Any potential shocks and upsets beyond the clash at Anfield? Man City, Hull. Hey, Man City, they're ripe for the taking, and Hull. Hey, this is the anniversary. Well, anniversary. It's the game with the halftime team talk out at Eastlands, isn't it?
Oh, it is too. Yeah, yeah.
Steve Bruce's Tigers.
Yeah, my.
Can they riff on Pellegrini's pain?
I don't think so.
No, you're thinking. Yeah, okay.
Steve Bruce was quite. I mean, they did very well last week to beat Norwich, but I was slightly puzzled by Steve Bruce's comments in the wake of their defeat at the hands of Chelsea, in which he basically gave the impression that they fully expected to lose, and he seemed to be totally in awe of Jose Mourinho. Mm. And I suspect possibly he might be going into this game with the same approach.
Right. Set pieces. Throw some corners at Joe Hart. See what happens.
Well, yeah, you could do that. I mean, I don't like riffing on Joe Hart's pain all the time, but he is not playing particularly well at the moment. Although he wasn't helped by his defence in the game against Cardiff, it must be said. So it would be unfair to point the big finger of blame exclusively in his direction.
And it's strange because the first half against Cardiff was probably one of his better games for Manchester City.
Was it?
It was terrific, yeah. Until that mistake, of course.
Right. Speaking of Cardiff, they're taking on Everton. Segue ahoy. Everton, Baines and Fellaini, that's beginning to come to the boil, that whole transfer saga. Any updates on that? No updates on that.
Well, the latest was that it was reported yesterday that Baines had asked Everton to, you know, chivvy them along to try and finalise a move. Lots of Everton fans got very outraged because the story, which was published in The Independent by Sam Wallace, who's a good respected journalist, didn't have any quotes in it, so they, you know, if it doesn't have quotes, then a lot of fans think it cannot be true. Even though lots of stories with quotes, the quotes turn out to be complete cobblers, such as, say, for example, Sam Allardyce saying last season he had no interest in signing Andy Carroll, and then signing Andy Carroll approximately 3 hours later. But after the game, after Everton's Capital One Cup game, Martinez was obviously asked about this, and he said that he didn't deny the story, but he said that he praised Baines and Fellaini's professionalism, which should be praised, I think, when you compare it to other players like Johan Caballé and Gareth Bale. I would say one or both will definitely end up at Manchester United by this time next week.
There you go, it's official.
Yeah.
Newcastle.
But I don't
Fulham.
Have any quotes.
Jay at Bridge Too Far says, can Philippe Auclair please formally retract his statement that Debussy is good? He's Bobbins, says
he was good. Oh. He was good. His head,
he was
his head.
He's good at the time.
Right. Yeah, he was good. He was good. Again, he was good when he was playing for Lille. And right. His head is in the wrong place.
And the club's in the wrong place as well. I'm not saying geographically. This isn't some kind of Tory Lord thing.
I mean, the interesting thing about the Newcastle team is that a lot of players who look good at certain times and look really awful at others. I mean, you can go through that whole team and they all had...
Shaqtiote, for example.
Yeah, they all had absolute fantastic spells where you think, you know, why isn't Chelsea or, you know, these kind of clubs are not looking at them, and then 6 months later they look totally average. Maybe it's something to do with the fact that Alan Pardew, by all accounts, isn't really the kind of heads-on manager coach who trains all the time with his players and kind of really improves them like some of the better coaches do.
West Ham Stoke, on an unrelated note, apparently Ravel Morrison, he of kind of teenage controversy and that, is playing brilliantly for the Hammers. Jacob Steinberg is really excited about Ravel Morrison.
Yeah, well, he was kind of forgotten about, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But Sir Alex Ferguson described him as arguably the best talent he'd ever had through the Manchester United U team, which is a massive shout. But his off-field problems are well documented. But, you know, if he can get his head right, the world's his lobster.
You haven't mentioned at all the Norwich City game against Southampton, but that's probably one that I'm definitely will try and watch in its integrality.
Why, Philippe?
Because I really, really enjoy the way Southampton are playing.
Right.
I really, really enjoy it. And I do believe they will be, like West Ham, one of those teams that will be...
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fighting to break into the top seven?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, and Carrow Road, a notoriously difficult venue to go to.
Yes, is it?
Yeah.
Statistically speaking?
Yeah, it is. It's really difficult to win.
It's behind a big supermarket, kind of.
Hey, no, I think I'm right in saying, and clearly I haven't bothered checking any stats on this, but Norwich City have a great home record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I don't
remember Arsenal the
last. Beat Arsenal there? Yeah, but, yeah. The 1-0.
Yeah, well, after they flew in.
That was terrible. Yeah, was it 35 minutes flight or something like that?
That's right. So, which is good deal shorter than it would have taken them by coach. Mm. Right, well, keep an eye on that one if you can, because I'm not sure if it's actually on telly, is it, Norwich Southampton?
One way or another, it will be.
All right. I think I know what you're saying. Palace Sunderland, we talked about. West Brom, Swansea. Ooh.
It's about 10 the Swansea woke up, isn't it?
Yeah. Tell you what, when you put together their record at the start of this season and their record at the end of last season, it starts to make very worrying reading.
I said to a Swansea fan that I thought the wheels had come off this season and he was having none of it. But I think he might be getting a little bit concerned now.
Mm.
Especially when you have to play the Europa League and if you want to play it seriously.
Right.
To be fair to them, I think they played very well against Man United and could have won that game. And, mm-hmm. and let's not forget, they've had a very difficult fixture list. I mean, it's much easier playing against the likes of Hull.
Mm. Okay, well, West Brom this weekend. If you are a football fan based in Swansea, you might be excited to know that Football Weekly will be coming to town in a very real sense on, I think I'm right in saying, November the 4th. Is that right? The gang will be heading down to do a special one-off live show.
It's news to me.
Swansea.
Does that mean I'm not invited?
I'm sure you'll be first name on the team sheet, Barry. And you don't have to make any...
I've never been in Swansea.
You don't have to create any new material. We can just use some old cast-offs. Yeah, but anyway...
Very lively city.
More when we know more. On the subject of West Brom, producer Ben wants to give a bit of credit to young... Is it Said Berino? Burundi-born, England under-21, who scored a 38-minute hat-trick against Newport, midweek in the League Cup, and should start whatever's happening with Anelka. So he's a talent to watch, isn't he? Right. For the Baggies. The game we haven't discussed yet is the other big one on Sunday at Anfield, Liverpool taking on Man United. First thing, is it going to be any good, this, or is it going to be a bit like that one on Monday night?
Of course it's going to be good. Well, you're so pessimistic.
Well, just because Monday night Man United were not good.
It's because all those Liverpool-Everton games with Moyes in charge were always really good, weren't they? Full of incident.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit of a shame that the so-called fixture computer has...
So-called why? Is this some kind of Moyesian paranoia?
I don't know.
It's computer, but it's also there's the human touch, isn't there?
So,
it's a computer.
Whoever is responsible,
right.
I think, is really robbing us a little bit of a spectacle by putting these big games on so early, because... None of these teams are quite there yet. Some of them are even trying still to try important players. And they're not really at full capacity in terms of what they can do on the pitch. So it's a real shame. You'd rather watch that game in October or November, like they do in Spain.
Right.
Or even Germany, where the also so-called uncorruptible computer always seems to put Bayern and Dortmund towards the end of the first half of the season.
Interesting you should say that. That would give us an opportunity to watch Luis Suarez involved in the game, because he won't be featuring in this. But Daniel Sturridge has been making hay in his absence with, 8 goals in 7?
Mm.
Who thought he was that good, sincerely? Producer Ben did. Producer Ben's got his hand out. Anybody else?
That good?
That good?
No, I didn't. Mm-hmm.
Should we wait until the
Brendan
end of the
Rodgers
season
seems to be doing a great job with
that good?
Yeah.
I mean, could we perhaps wait a little bit longer?
If you put together the end of last season and the start of this...
No, it's terrific, yeah. Absolutely. And some of the goals have been of great quality, yeah. And some of the link-up play has been very good.
How about that goal with the outside of his left foot on the weekend?
Nice finish, but you could say that one of his touches was a bit too heavy, which is why he had to extend.
I think what this shows us, though, is that he's the kind of player, and a lot of centre-forwards are similar in that respect, that if you give him sole responsibility or, you know, make sure that he's aware that he is the guy who's going to be in that game every single time, every single week, the main man who everyone's looking for, he will excel in that. And, you know, you wonder if it's a coincidence that his best form has come during the absence of one Mr. Suarez. And there were a lot of, I think the reason why there weren't more hands up right now when you asked that question is because when he came into the Liverpool team, a lot of people said, can they really play together?
But they immediately linked up really, really well, I thought. In the game against Man United, wasn't it?
I can't remember that, but... I think he needs to be playing centrally.
Mm-hmm.
And with, you know, other strikers involved, he sometimes gets shoved out on the wide because he has pace and can play that position, but it's obviously not his favourite position. I think that was the issue at Chelsea as well. But he's one of those strikers that, by Premier League standards, is very good. Whether he is actually sort of really, really good...
Well, the stats are certainly impressive at the moment. There won't be a Suarez issue this time around. Mm. Liverpool won 4 in a row. United still finding their shape under Moyes. Barry, what's your feeling about this?
I think...
Yeah?
Liverpool fans will be concerned by the fact that last season... of the 6 teams who finished above them in the table, they only beat 1, Spurs.
Mm.
But they will be heartened by the fact that their team seems to have learned to close out games, and they've been impressive in their first 2 games this season and have closed them out well under pressure, you know, in the closing minutes or the entire second half in the case of the game against Villa.
Your conclusion?
My conclusion is that it will be a draw.
Ah!
But a scoring draw, not a nil-nil.
I hope it's not a nil-nil draw.
I'm sure we all do.
I'm sure you must.
Well, no, so many of our listeners seem to think bad nil-nil draws are brilliant.
They're only pretending to think that.
I know that, yes.
Brainwashed by Jonathan Wilson, no doubt.
Yeah.
I think that the way that this United team is being set up at the moment, they actually quite enjoy playing against a team who wants to play possession football and wants to go forward a bit. And I wouldn't be surprised if they win 1 or 2 nil on the counter.
There you go. That will be one of the topics we're discussing on next week's Football Weekly, which will be up slightly later than usual, because we're basically hanging on to the end of the transfer window to see all the exciting players Arsene Wenger's going to buy. In the meantime, that's it for today. Have a super weekend, why don't you? Barry Glendinning, thanks for being with us.
Thanks.
Philippe Auclair, good luck with whatever you're up to this weekend.
Thank you.
And many thanks for being here today. Raphael, you're off on holiday to Puglia.
It's a wedding.
Oh, you're off to a wedding in Puglia. Okay, cool. Will you be performing any function?
I hope not. Already married.
Right. You're being saucy, aren't you? Puglia is the heel of the Italian boot, basically.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Down that way, Bari, that kind of thing.
How do you say saucy in Italian? Something with ragu?
Malizioso? No, I mean, not really.
No.
No, but there is a thing about...
Dolmio.
Huh?
Dolmio.
Yeah.
Anyway, cheers all, and we'll catch up with you early next week.